listening to the Survival in Motion podcast. Learn, adapt, prepare, survive.
Hello, everyone. This is author Cal Wilson, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of the Survival in Motion podcast. As you can probably tell from my voice here, I'm definitely under the weather. What started as just sniffles and sneezes and sore throat progressed to painful cough and fever and muscle aches and pains. So I definitely have the flu. And I'll tell you what, I'll try not to breathe too heavily into the microphone here. And you should not listen too closely to the speakers where you're listening this, so you won't actually catch my flu, because as we all know, it's possible to catch the flu by listening to a podcast that was recorded by somebody who has the flu. All right, a silver lining is when you have the flu, your brain is just a little bit off. So if you ever say anything kind of awkward or strange, you can blame having the flu. And that's handy. It's always handy to have an excuse for stuff like that. Also, another silver lining is my wife likes my voice being a little bit deeper. And it does enable me to sing along to my favorite Johnny Cash songs. The other day I was singing Folsom Prison Blues in my car. And I'd like to think if a blind person got into the car and heard that, they would probably think there are two Johnny Cashes in this car here singing that song. Maybe I flatter myself. I don't know. Anyway, having the flu got me thinking, how bad can flu epidemics or pandemics be? And what can we do to protect ourselves? If you hear that sucking in my mouth, I've got some cough drops here. Okay, first, some definitions on some terms that I'll be discussing in this podcast. A bacteria is a round, spiral, or rod-shaped single-cell microorganism that typically lives in soil, water, organic matter, or the bodies of plants or animals. Think parasite. A virus is a biological agent that reproduces inside the cells of living hosts. That means a virus will go into the cells of your body and take over the nucleus of those cells, reprogram that nucleus so that the nucleus then starts reproducing other viruses, like identical copies. I think viruses are pretty devious. A fungus is something I'm not going to be discussing here, but I wanted to mention a fungus and fungi, plural. They could be an issue in a total societal collapse. And I talked about this in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping, where in case of a total societal collapse, there are going to be a lot of people out there walking around with wet and dirty clothing and shoes. And those are the ideal conditions to get jockey itch and athlete's foot, both of which are very painful. So if you stock up on antifungus cream right now, that's something that you could barter with later on. And I think you can just name your own price, because athlete's foot, I know just from a couple years ago, is extremely painful. Anyway, this reminds me of a joke. A guy asks a girl out on a date, and she says, "Of course not. You're so disgusting. You look kind of like a fungus." And the guy says, "Well, come to think of it, I am a fungi." Okay, I'm sorry about that. The podcast got off to such a good start. Now I throw a pun joke. I'm sorry about it. Anyway, other terms to know. Endemic is a disease that permanently exists in a particular region or population, like malaria in Africa. It's endemic. An epidemic is an outbreak of a disease that attacks many people at about the same time and may spread through one or several communities. A pandemic is when an epidemic spreads throughout the world. And in my opinion, most epidemics are really pandemics. If you can think about just how easily your average flu or whatever spreads, all it takes is an infected flight attendant on an overseas stop, you know, sneezing in some elevator, and voila, the flu epidemic of that year is now a pandemic. I think the term is probably just not used that much because it is kind of a scary term, pandemic, but it's basically just if the flu jumps the border, goes on to another continent, that kind of thing. The average flu season in the United States, up to 20% get the flu. 30 to 40,000 people per year die of it, and that is roughly 0.1% of the population. Most of those people are over 65. I don't want to discount that. It's still a heartbreak, but those are the facts. Complications of the flu, that normally means pneumonia. Flu is spread through droplets in the air. Sick people sneeze or cough, and what they do is they emit into the air beads of moisture that contain the flu virus that can travel up to 6 feet, by the way. You're exposed to the flu when you breathe in those droplets, or if they land on your mouth, nose, or eyes, or if they land on your hand and you touch yourself, your eyes, or whatever. Also, if you touch a desk or counter or doorknob that has been sneezed on, or somebody else infected sneezed on their hand and then they turn the doorknob, that kind of thing. The virus can live on hard surfaces for up to 48 hours. Flu is an annual epidemic, probably pandemic. Another thing, records are not kept that well in the third world, and that's where the conditions are more ripe to spread diseases. That's where population density is a lot higher, and things are less clean there. So, and of course, they have worse record keeping. So flu and pandemics in general, I believe, spread more in the third world than we know. The first known flu pandemic reportedly occurred in 412 BC. And higher mortality rated flu pandemics have occurred roughly every 10 to 30 years, including in the years 1830. 1889 was the Russian flu, so-called. There was one in 1900. There was the Spanish flu of 1918. That was a big one. I'll talk about that later. The Asian flu of 1957, Hong Kong flu of 1968. The H5N1 bird flu first appeared in 2003. And then the swine flu of 2010. All right, the big one was 1918 to 1919, the Spanish flu. It was called Spanish because so many people in Spain died, but it originated in Kansas. 500 million people got it, and 30 to 50 million people died from it. That means there's a 10% mortality rate from the flu. And that was roughly about 1% of the world population, probably more. It killed more people than World War I did and World War II combined. H5N1 is also a big one. That's a bird flu that began in 2003 in Asia. And I remember watching the news reports when this came out. And the two numbers that stuck in my mind is the reported number of people who actually came down with it, became infected with it. And number two, the number of people who died from that. And if you run the numbers, there's a 60% mortality rate from H5N1. There are some promising vaccines for this H5N1, but bad news is this virus is constantly mutating. So in my opinion, H5N1 could be a horrible pandemic on the horizon. We might be revisited from H5N1 in the form of a horrible pandemic a few years from now. That's my theory. Other famous pandemics include the so-called Plague of Justinian. That was in 540 AD. And it went on for a couple hundred years after that, but it peaked in 540 AD. It was an earlier form of the bubonic plague, and it afflicted the Eastern Roman Empire and resulted in the deaths of an estimated 25 to 50 million people. And at the time, that was 25% of the world's population. That's the Plague of Justinian in 540 AD. And it's named after Justinian, the Roman emperor, who actually got it himself, but he did survive. Think of it, 25% of the world's population died from the plague of Justinian in 540 AD. It made another reappearance in Europe, the so-called Black Death, in the 1340s and 1350s in Europe and in Asia. That's when the Silk Route opened up. So there was a lot of spices and silks being imported from East Asia. And that's where this strain of bubonic plague came from. But here are the numbers. 35 million deaths from the Black Death in the 1340s and 1350s. That's 30 to 60% of all of Europe. Bubonic plague is spread by rats and their fleas. And it's still around. Today, bubonic plague is rare, but it's still out there. The symptoms are fever, headaches, vomiting, and mostly swollen lymph nodes. The usual onset is 1 to 7 days after exposure. Causes, of course, by rats and fleas. Swollen lymph nodes, that's a big deal with bubonic plague. The treatment is antibiotics such as streptomycin, gentamicin, or doxycycline. It's still 50% fatal. Even if you get treatment, there's a 10% mortality rate with bubonic plague. All right, let me take a step back here. See what I'm talking about? I started talking about how I have the flu and my thinking is a little bit off. Sometimes started talking about the flu and infections and so forth, and now I'm talking about the bubonic plague. So that's an example of awkwardness when you have the flu. But I can blame the flu, so that's handy. I wanted to talk quickly about dysentery and cholera, both of which are horrible: diarrhea with blood in the stool and sometimes vomiting. Death by dehydration is possible. I think I once had dysentery myself. After I left from a trip I took to Central America, I made the mistake of stopping into a restaurant right next to the airport right before I left. And I made the mistake of eating a salad there that was a no-no. The salad was probably washed by the local water. When you're in a part of the world with questionable cleanliness and questionable water, everything you eat should be in a bowl in front of you and piping hot. And I stopped into what looked like a pretty nice restaurant, ordered a salad. Next thing you know, I think I had some of the worst diarrhea I've ever had. And after a couple hours, I realized my life is in danger because of dehydration. So I began drinking any water I could get my hands on. And I finally called out to a local friend who brought over some Lomatil, which is diarrhea medication. But I feel like my life was threatened by dysentery that trip. So the answer to that is, of course, keep your water clean. If it's up to you, keep the sewage far away from your water sources. London learned that the hard way in, I think, the 1850s. Smallpox is a virus that produces boils on the skin. It's been around a long time. Mummies from ancient Egypt have been found to have smallpox scars. Early Spanish explorers of America brought smallpox and killed off many indigenous people in America. Reportedly, British soldiers defended themselves at Fort Pitt in 1763 by giving blankets laced with smallpox to the Native Americans trying to take the fort. That was the first known case of biological warfare. Smallpox is mostly eradicated nowadays, but vials of the virus still exist in government vaults, so it could reappear. Polio is a virus that results in paralysis, but there is a great vaccine for polio, and the polio virus is not known to mutate. All right, tuberculosis, or TB, is a lung bacterial infection that can be treated with antibiotics. I mentioned these three mostly eradicated diseases, smallpox, polio, and TB, because with government becoming more involved in healthcare, medical services will probably be rationed, in my opinion. So you should get the vaccines whenever possible and stock up on antibiotics while they are still available. And I say antibiotics or fish antibiotics. So regarding smallpox that still exists in the hands of government somewhere, a case has been made that the 2001 anthrax attacks were conducted by a government insider who took that strain of anthrax out of a government vault somewhere. So we should always consider the possibility of government insiders acting against Americans in bringing back old diseases, not just anthrax or smallpox, but whatever else they have out there. So again, get the vaccines whenever possible and stock up on antibiotics. And some people might say, oh, you're just being paranoid. The government pulling out stuff to, you know, start a disease or something. Well, check out Exhibit A, the Rosenberg case in the 1950s, in which Americans Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were convicted of handing over nuclear designs to the Soviets. Well, okay, how do you answer that one? Even their supporters nowadays agree that there was some information handed over. They dispute how important it was. And so nobody's disputing there was spies who meant to give over extremely dangerous information to the Soviets. I've been watching the TV show called The Crown about the early days of the reign of Queen Elizabeth in England. There was one episode that reenacted the actions of King Edward VIII, who was a predecessor of Queen Elizabeth. And I have to admit, I was mad. I was angry. I was incensed by the actions of King Edward VIII and his help of the Nazis in World War II, and I'm not even a British citizen. All right, are there Americans within our government today who would bring back eradicated diseases to kill us off, like what might have happened with anthrax? I'd say probably they exist. Whether it will happen, we don't know. Every day we watch the news, we hear of government officials in our government. It might not be communists like the Rosenbergs were, but they are in the government and they blame the United States for a lot of the world's problems. They may feel that acting against the U.S. in releasing some dangerous pathogen might be fair in light of damage the U.S. has, quote-unquote, inflicted on the rest of the world. It's possible. I know that sounds paranoid, but if anyone had predicted the Rosenberg case before it happened, or if anybody had predicted King Edward VIII would do what he did during World War II, they'd also be called paranoid. But hey, it happened, you know?
It's time to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Wise Company emergency meals are packaged and proportioned perfectly in order to make sure that there is no waste. Traditional food storage items can be time-consuming and difficult to prepare, not to mention leaving you with a meal that is hardly appetizing. What good is emergency food if you and your family don't love the taste?
And no more space than a washer and dryer takes up, you can store enough ready-made meals to feed a family of six for a full year.
Wise Company meals are designed to protect your most valuable asset, your family.
Introducing a fresh new way to filter your water, the Every Drop Water Filter. It's five times faster than leading brand filter pitchers. The Every Drop Water Filter's sleek contour design fills virtually anything. At home and on the go, everyone can enjoy freshly filtered water. Water at the speed of life. Experience the freedom and possibilities. Refresh your life with the new Every Drop Water Filter. Water at the speed of life.
Our brave military men and women are not the only ones who pay the price in war. Golden Corral would like to announce a special place, Camp Corral, a summer camp for children of wounded or disabled military families. The camp is free, offering kids a week of a lifetime, and is made possible by my friends at Golden Corral. So stop by Golden Corral and show your support for Camp Corral. Help send a deserving child to camp this summer.
I didn't truly understand the Second Amendment until I was stalked, threatened, and told to fear for my children's lives. I knew in that moment that my right to defend my life and my family is sacred, and so is yours. Never let them take it away from you. It is your choice and no one else's. I'm the National Rifle Association of America, and I'm freedom's safest place.
You're listening to the Survival in Motion podcast with author Cal Wilson.
In 2014, there was an Ebola virus outbreak in West Africa and almost in the United States. Ebola is a virus spread by contact with an infected person's liquids, including sneezing. 4 to 10 days after exposure, the Ebola-infected person begins experiencing sore throat, fever, diarrhea, constant bleeding, organ failure, and death within 15 days. Ebola has a 90%+ mortality rate. Death is usually caused by organ failure and low blood pressure caused by lack of fluids. In 2014, Ebola barely came to the U.S. Only a few people were infected in the United States. But in my opinion, political correctness influenced U.S. government efforts to protect Americans from Ebola. And you can't convince me otherwise. We were treated to the spectacle of, if you can remember those days, a man from Liberia who flew into Dallas and he realized that he had Ebola. So he called an ambulance. The ambulance came over and the ambulance guys, they weren't wearing Tyvek suits or gloves or respirators. What's that? You know, no problem there. They helped this guy into the ambulance, drove him off. Before the guy got in the ambulance, he vomited in the parking lot there. And that vomit was like a biological nuclear bomb. I mean, that could have been used by our enemies. I mean, people could have casually been infected by that vomit. But the apartment manager came out and just hosed it off into the local storm drain. It was mind-boggling to watch all this. You should watch the movie Facing Darkness, which is done by Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham. I have a soft spot in my heart for Samaritan's Purse. I've volunteered with them in the past. it's not the point of the movie, but it occurred to me as I was watching that movie that Samaritan's Purse and Doctors Without Borders, I think that was the one other organization, they were all alone in 2014 fighting Ebola where it was incubating in Liberia and Sierra Leone. Dr. Kent Brantley followed all the protocols not to get Ebola, but got it anyway. And basically, they would suit up those people like they were astronauts going into outer space. It's amazing that that guy got Ebola. But see, what they were watching out for was the transmission of Ebola by liquids. It might have been by somebody having Ebola just exhaling nearby. That might be. We still don't know for sure. Lucky for Dr. Brantley, an experimental medication called ZMAP was used and apparently worked on him. There's a virus out there that's even worse called the Marburg virus, same symptoms of Ebola, but it incubates and spreads several weeks before symptoms are shown. And that's the thing. When symptoms show up, the infection is already all around. So if somebody is shown to have the Marburg virus, that means the preceding 30 days or even longer, they've been walking around infecting other people. So that's Marburg. All right, let me go back to bacteria. Anthrax. It's a deadly bacteria originally found naturally in farms. The symptoms match a really bad flu with lung collapse and death at the end. There is a vaccine, and anthrax infection is sometimes treatable with antibiotics like Cipro. In 2001, right after 9/11, someone mailed a bunch of anthrax spores to several media outlets and a handful of politicians. Five people, mostly mail handlers, died, and the crime was never solved. Like I said earlier, it could have been a government insider who stole part of an anthrax supply from the U.S. government. It could have also had something to do with the 9/11 killers. Muhammad Atta, a few weeks before 9/11, did ask about renting a crop duster. And I can imagine filling up a crop duster with some kind of disease, anthrax or whatever, and flying over a downtown. You know, I just shudder to think what the results of that would be. If you suspect an anthrax letter, iron the letter for 5 minutes. Reportedly, that has helped. Or whatever you suspect of being infected with anthrax, if you boil it for 30 minutes, that's been known to work too. Also, recently there was a North Korean soldier who defected. He ran across the border to South Korea. His blood was tested to have anthrax antibodies. So that means that North Korea also has anthrax, as does who knows how many other bad players in the world. We already knew, and I talked about this in a previous podcast, that North Korea has VX, which is a nerve agent. They used that to kill Kim Jong-un's stepbrother a few years ago. So we know that they have anthrax. We know that they have VX. Anyway, how to protect yourself from a virus or bacteria infection? You have to become germ and virus phobic. Just stay away from infected people. Well, duh. Avoid groups like airplanes. That air is all just recirculated. If somebody in the back of the plane is infected and they sneeze, guess what? That air is recirculated to you in the front or wherever. I mean, it's all over. Airplanes are pretty bad. Stay away from other groups like elevators, stadiums, subways, buses. Avoid grade school or kindergarten kids and their parents, teachers, and staff. It's never failed to amaze me. Every time I'm nearby an elementary school or kindergarten, those kids think nothing of just sneezing straight in your face. Try not to use handrails, doorknobs, or public counters. A couple days ago, I was walking up a stairwell at a government building, and I thought, you know, I can probably climb up this stairwell fine without touching the handrail. If you touch a handrail and somebody who's infected had just coughed in their hand and then touched that handrail, then you're now infected. Doorknobs in public restrooms. Many people who go into a public restroom do their business and then wash their hands and then leave. But a lot of people do their business, don't wash their hands, and then they handle that doorknob walking out. And if you go in, do your business, wash your hands, and then handle that doorknob, well, you might be infected nevertheless. Don't touch your face, eyes, mouth, or nose unless you wash your hands first. You should constantly wash your hands with water and soap. Sneeze or cough into your elbow so that drops are not airborne and infect others. Okay, here's kind of a practical example of how this all might make a difference to you. Let's assume you go to work during the day, whether it's a cubicle or an office, or if you're, I don't know, a driver of some sort, you only handle your pens, pencils, you handle your keyboard that only you handle, you handle your steering wheel and gear shift that only you handle, that's all right. And then you go to the restroom, you do your business, and then you wash your hands, that's good. And then at some point you go to eat lunch somewhere and you open up the front door of the place, and that doorknob within the last 4 days had been handled by somebody who was infected with the flu and had sneezed on their hand. And like I said, that is still contagious within 4 days. And then you order your meal and then you eat your meal. And whether it's a taco or a hamburger or fried chicken or French fries even, it's become apparent to me this last few days that I've had the flu that I handle a lot of the food that I put in my mouth. And I know I'm probably pretty typical of your average American guy. So that might have been how I got this flu. I don't know. But the name of the game is, before you order your meal and get your food that you handle and put in your mouth, like a hamburger, it's a good idea to go in the restroom and wash your hands with soap and water. And then, of course, not handle the doorknob on the way out of the restroom, if that's possible. Either that or learn to spend more time eating with a fork and knife. I don't know if that's possible with a taco or something, but I think that's how I might have gotten this flu, and I think that's how a lot of people get the flu. That's just one example, but that's how you have to be careful about handling items like doorknobs or counters or whatever, where somebody who had the flu sneezed in their hand and had previously handled that within 4 days. That's an example of how this is relevant. Another thing to protect yourself, get the flu shot. This is not universally accepted. There are a lot of people, and I've heard some good arguments against getting the flu shot. Supposedly, the flu shots in the past 5 years have been 20 to 60% effective. So, not too encouraging there. Complications from the flu become pneumonia, so antibiotics like azithromycin might help address that symptom. If a horrible pandemic breaks out, spray diluted bleach on everything that comes your way, like mail. And by the way, when it comes to bleach, keep in mind, the bleach you buy off the shelf in the supermarket that has already started diluting and only has a couple months left before it's totally diluted and useless, the way you can make your own bleach that is fresh and brand new and workable and potent is by stocking up on something called pool shock. And you need to be careful with it because it's pretty strong. But if you mix different doses with water, you can make your own bleach. I talked about that in my book, Dirt Cheap Valuable Prepping. If you get infected with the flu or any of these diseases, stay well hydrated, get lots of rest, try not to infect others. That's what I'm doing right now. It might not be a great idea to do a podcast, but there you have it. I'm also taking the advice of the late Dr. Linus Pauling in megadosing vitamin C. Dr. Pauling won the Nobel Prize in chemistry. Megadosing of vitamin C is controversial, and not everybody has accepted that, but I do. Also, take lots of cough drops, which I'm taking a lot of right now. In fact, I have a 5-gallon bucket full. In fact, for me lately that I've had this flu, cough drops have become a separate food group. You know, like there are meats, there's dairy, there's vegetables and fruits, and for me now there's cough drops, just like any other food group. The point here is do your best to avoid infection, but if you get infected, like the flu, get hydrated and take care of yourself. Remember, your body is fighting off something. I think hydration is key. You know, Ebola is a 90% mortality rate. That means 10% survived it. And I never saw any study on what that 10% had in common, but I'll bet it had a lot to do with hydrating, you know, to constantly drink more, drink a lot of water. Blood transfusions might have also had a lot to do with it, but the more hydrated you are, the more your blood pressure stays a normal level, and the more likely your organs are to actually function. So stay hydrated if you're sick, no matter what the disease. Anyway, I hope you found this podcast to be educational and informative. I hear the music. That means our time is up. Thanks for joining me. God bless.